Hello everyone, this is Ryan with Product Hunt Radio. We're here at Product Hunt HQ. What's up, Eric?
We just, I just found out we just got shahidied.
We did just now?
Yeah, we are getting tweets from Justin Bieber fans and or robots all over the world.
Oh man, I missed that. I've been off Twitter for about 20 minutes and this is what happens.
Yeah, it's happening right now.
I love shots and John Shahidi. Yeah. I may be a little biased though as an investor.
Yes, and who is this speaking?
This is Ben Parr, everybody.
Hello, Ben. Welcome to our home.
Oh, thank you. Should I introduce myself?
Yeah, go for it.
So I am the author of a new book called Captivology, The Science of Capturing People's Attention. You can't see it right now, but I'm holding the book in the air. It's on the science and psychology of attention, why we pay attention to certain people and products, and how to utilize that to capture, maintain, and grow the attention of others. So perfect for entrepreneurs who want to get the attention of users. I'm also the co-founder of Dominate Fund, early stage VC fund. We teach and coach startups on attention, invest in great companies like Ubeam, Shots.
Ubeam is wireless electricity.
Over distance using ultrasound.
Yes, sounds amazing.
It's going to be amazing.
It sounds like magic. Maybe. See, that was a segue.
Yeah. That's an amazing segue.
Word to David from Secret.
I know. Props. Yeah. So I really want to talk about magic because this is a product that blew up recently, and it's a product for people to text message something to happen. So they want, you know, any kind of like Postmates service delivery or really anything at all. You text this phone number 408-217-1721. And it will do things for you like magic.
How is it different? We had Chloe on the podcast recently.
Yeah.
How is it different from that?
So Chloe is more like a Q&A service, kind of like Cha-Cha back in the day, but smarter and more friendly. And so Chloe's more about answering questions like, which restaurant should I go to and that kind of thing. Magic, from what I've gathered, is more of, I want this to happen.
Action-based.
Yeah.
I just actually just texted. I wanted to see what happens if with the response, because I have, I've used a lot of these smart assistant apps. Yeah. And it is so hard to stand out anymore in that space because they feel like they launch like one really good one every month. But
yeah.
this one's simple, which is the key to this one, right? It's text a number, you get something. Now, still people don't know, is it algorithmic? Are there people? Is there some kind of magical space alien?
I think it's just magic, man.
I think that's a great marketing message, right? There's no point. It's like, don't need to know what's happening. Just trust us with your credit card information, and it'll be great. And don't worry about those charges for $80,000 poker nights.
Yeah, don't worry about that. Well, what's weird is, when they first launched, their homepage looked really sketchy. They updated it. It looks a little less sketchy now. Literally, it was Times New Roman font, and it had a phone number on it, and I can't remember exactly, but it was just not something that looked like anyone put any time into. And then it said something about like some phone charges, and it's like, I'm not going to like text this number. It looks shady. But apparently it's legit, and people are using it.
It's got 17,000 texts in a couple of days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, I think it's interesting to see, we've talked about this actually on the podcast once before, or a few times maybe, is this like trend towards, I don't know, I've been calling them like invisible apps where they're products that are built on top of existing technologies and protocols like email or SMS that don't have an interface really. It's not an app you download. It's not a website you go to. It's just this place that you interface with this other service through something that you use every single day, which again, email, SMS, and so on. And I don't know, I've seen more and more of these pop up lately.
Well, part of it is that it's easier to build an invisible app like that. It's just easier actually to do the MVP. I can't imagine that if magic, for example, were to keep growing and keep getting, you know, going more viral, it wouldn't build its own app and have that kind of interface. You eventually want control over that, because if you're built on somebody else's platform, and we saw this years ago with Facebook apps, like, you'll get destroyed at some point. It happened to Twitter apps, it happened to Facebook apps. You need to be able to either control your own platform or have like your own interface at some point. But in the first stages, absolutely, like, you're doing what magic and a whole bunch of others do, which is you build the simplest effing thing possible, and you make the interface dead simple as possible, or you just use SMS, and it works. And nobody asks too many questions, at least in the beginning.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm curious to see what happens to it. I think there are benefits in having these that are built into SMS because you're going to read them, but at the same time, you don't have very much control over that. It's just text.
I wonder how fast this is. I haven't tried it yet. I texted the number and I said, I want a cat or a burrito. So we'll see if by the end of this podcast, I get a text about either a cat or a burrito.
A cat or a burrito.
A cat or a burrito.
What if you get both? A cat burrito.
I would. A cat burrito sounds like a fantastic mascot.
You know, I saw a Photoshop of a cat in a burrito literally yesterday, so this is weird. This is, there's some sort of, something's going to happen.
Well, there's also, funny enough, I'm offering Captivology burritos for anybody who pre-orders the 42 copies of the book.
What is in a Captivology?
All mystery cat? Items based all mystery items based off the book, but I should totally add a cat to that.
Yeah.
Well, actually, you know, mystery items, it could be a cat. I don't know.
Maybe. How are you marketing the book, by the way? Because you've done some interesting things leading up to it.
So a lot of the marketing really happens after the book is out, but pre-marketing really focuses on, you know, your personal network and getting the book out and influencers. So there's a bunch of really amazing people who have seen early copies of the book and are going to be talking about it on launch day. And I've gotten really good response on that. Mm-hmm. But a lot, you're going to see a lot more of the interesting stuff. I'm not going to mention any of them quite yet because they're not out. You guys, these two know a little bit about some of the crazy stunts we're going to be pulling. But there's a couple really fascinating things we'll be doing over the next few months.
Will there be cats?
There will be cats in one of them, for
okay.
sure.
Yeah, you gotta be.
There are cats in one of them. It's going to be that the biggest one. I have not even told you this one yet. There are cats.
Okay. We halfway considered renting cats, if you can even do that, for our happy hour. And then we realized how bad of an idea that was, and we didn't. But I mean, maybe one of these days.
What you could do instead is you could host it. They have the kitten cafes, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You could host like a happy hour at a kitten cafe.
Yeah.
I think after seeing the pictures of the lines last time, you could pack that place.
Yeah. That could be fun.
Mm. Yeah.
Cafe.
I'm curious. So you were at Mashable for a bunch of years, right?
I was co-editor, ran West Coast for 3.5 years.
And then after that, you started your fund.
Yep.
And so what kind of led the decision to write the book?
Really, it was actually the startups, you know. After I started doing some investing and talking about it more, all the questions in terms of help that startups wanted really came around attention, right? They wanted help. How do I meet journalists, get more press? How do I do a go-to-market strategy? What do I do to increase the virality of our product? Customer and user acquisition, how do we work with celebrities to increase visibility? All those areas are really attention, right? And so the more I got asked that, the more I was just like, that's interesting. And I've had book offers over the years, but this was the first time I looked into a subject and like, this is super fascinating, and nobody's really written something that's both details the science and is very accessible to the general public. So I'm like, okay, sure, I think I'll write this. And then I got introduced to my agent, who's fantastic, represented of all people, Britney Spears and Pope John Paul II.
What? Really?
He got him the biggest deal in history at the time for Pope John Paul II.
Oh. That's an interesting company to be in.
You know, it's a total match. Mike Tyson, too. This guy, it's amazing. So I got a fantastic, I got a fantastic publisher, and just like, I wanted to do it. And it was just such a fascinating topic, and I just had to write about it.
Yeah. So how did you write it? Like, going back to the product side, what tools did you use to write it? Or, yeah. Because there are actually a lot of people who either blog or write that are in the product line community.
I feel like I should make a collection for this.
You should.
Yeah. I'm going to totally make a collection for this after this. That'd after be awesome. The podcast. But a couple of the key items that I used to make the book. Evernote was clearly one of the important ones. Mm-hmm. Being able to take notes and especially record the notes is utterly important for doing a book. And I interviewed, 55 people for the book? Mm-hmm. Sheryl Sandberg and Steven Soderbergh and all these people. I wanted to make sure I had their words correct. I used Rev.com actually a lot in conjunction to that. You used Rev.com?
Sounds familiar. What is it?
It's $1 a minute for transcripts. It's like they transcribe your all of your interviews.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really cheap, and it happens in 24 hours, and it's super useful. Mm-hmm. I abuse them so much. It's actually Brian Stelter of CNN who introduced me, who told me to use this product.
Yeah.
I'm going to say this product wrong. It's I think it's called Scrivener.
Yeah.
Have you used it?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good for long form writing.
Oh, that's what you use?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So Scrivener is a fantastic tool for long form writing and writing books. Like, it's a Mac app, and like, just go detailed. Like, you can divide into chapters. You can real search tools. Lots of like sticky notes and other things to use. It's not a simple product. Like, you need to invest time to learn it. But if you're doing a book, you're going to already invest time. And that thing saved me so much time. You know, it had like daily word counts telling me if I hit my word numbers, you know, citations, everything, automatic conversions. Mm-hmm. That one was really, really, really useful.
It also just makes you feel like you're writing something literary. Like Evernote, really? You know, you're just kind of taking notes. Yeah. But this, it's for writers. You know?
Yeah, it's very, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like, I can't speak it's the praises of that product enough. It was essential for writing a book. I use Pocket a lot. A lot. I saved all like the PDF articles. Like, you know, I went through 1,000 research studies and I saved them all on Pocket. And so I could like go and review, and then the tagging was really important for in that case, because I would tag like, here's the key terms if this was like a, for which chapter of the book this would apply to. It made it much easier to go through everything, and automatically searching through all the articles that I collected, Pocket was really, really great for writing the book as well.
Yeah. I've been using Pocket not for categorizing, but just for saving things for years.
Yeah. It's really useful. Yeah. I mean, it's I'm weird because now I'm switching my behavior again to just like using it for reading articles. I'm like, this doesn't feel normal anymore.
I know.
It's so useful though.
So I, this is kind of relevant to write. Well, it is a writing product, but I have to bring it up because it's just delightful. It's called Emojinate.
Emojinate.
I showed this to you. It was on Product Hunt a couple weeks ago, I think. What's awesome about it is actually, it's silly at first, but it actually is a really good way to kind of test your writing muscle in some ways. So what it does is you get 5 random emojis, and the goal is to just tell a story using those emojis.
That's amazing!
It is.
That's creativity. I love it.
It is. And so I started writing some, and I was like, whoa, this is kind of fun. I could see myself doing this more often. And it's just a really easy way to kind of build that muscle, you know?
I had to, like, maybe every once in a while, I'm just going to tweet you 5 emojis and see what you come up with in response, both of you.
Ooh, I like that. That's a good... You could productize that. You create a system where you...
They seem like they productize
it. I mean, but they don't use Twitter. They don't prompt people.
Well, yeah, because you could totally, like, tweet that out and challenge your friends to write a great...
I challenge you to an Emojinate contest, and, like, the world says which one is better, hot or not, for Emojinates.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
We request for products. We're going to hunt it if you build it.
Yeah, yeah. Have you thought about emojifying your entire book? Like
Emoji Dick.
Yeah, exactly.
Moby Dick in emojis.
Is there an automatic way to do that, though? Because if there were, I would consider it.
There's a way on your iPhone when you're typing for it to translate into emojis automatically. But I don't know about like literary...
I think someone had to go through all of Moby Dick.
I want to see how it would emojinate like Dr. Thomas Day's and Gotita. Or like... the illusion of truth effect, or some of these random psychological terms.
That would be deep.
If someone builds it, call me.
That would be super cool. Are there any other products you've been using lately that you find interesting or different?
I mean, so I'm thinking about this a little bit because, you know, the last few weeks for me has been like, you're like stuck in email and you're trying to like manage like all this kind of inbound, and so you know, you like it's like things like Wunderlist and Boomerang and Streak in for Gmail, which are really, really all useful for just managing all this sort of thing, being able to respond back to different scheduling issues, being able to keep track of all the stuff you do. Like I used to use Clear for my to-do list, but it wasn't good for, you know, multiple people working on the same stuff, so I switched with my assistant to Wunderlist, and that's been fantastic actually, because it's been easier for each of us to assign stuff to each other and be able to track and like which things are happening and not happening. I think like a lot of the times for me when I'm using products, it's either going to be for, you know, shits and giggles, or it's going to be for productivity, and those are my two buckets.
That's actually similar to myself. Like, more and more products I regularly use are ones to save time. And then
the or kill time.
Kill time, yeah, exactly. Save time or kill time. Yeah, and there are a number of silly things I use every now and then, but I don't come back to them. It's really the ones that save time that really help.
I mean, I also invested in personally invested in a company called Glassbreakers, which is an awesome product for helping women find mentors. And so the big issue is that it's been easier for men to find mentors and male mentors, and a lot of my success is due to my two entrepreneurial mentors Troy Heinekoff of Techstars Chicago and Mark Ackler of Math Ventures. But for women, it's so much harder, and there's not enough of that sort of support structure. And the things that Glassbreakers wants to do to give more support for women in business and just, you know, in general support for, you know, business is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Are they focused on tech specifically, or is it
starting all fields? You start with an area. I'm not going to necessarily say what their expansion plan is, but they're already working on it. But tech is the first most clear area, and it's the area they come from. But yeah. I can see lots of different opportunities for expansion and a lot of different avenues they could take. Mm-hmm. It's just all in the end, like, will they kick ass? And these two, like Lauren and Eileen, will kick ass.
Yeah,
that's what I ask for.
Do you think, actually, to go off on that topic, how, if someone wants to get into startups, let's say they're soon to be college graduate or just out of high school, do you have any advice or guidance on how to break into the startup world and be successful? I know it's a really broad question.
Oh no, I do have guidance. I have like a checklist of things I tell new people who just graduated from college and such when they come. So first thing is move. And I honestly mean that, because if you want to, it's all about, number one, people and networking and building those relationships with people. And you just can't do that unless you're at ground zero. You've got to be, you're going to have to be in either New York, LA, or San Francisco. And I love Chicago, but Chicago is not as strong of a tech industry. Those three cities, especially Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. And what you need to do, like, in your first year specifically, is just meet as many people as you go. Go to as many events as you can. Get to know as many people. Sit down for as many coffees as possible. Just get to know people. Learn the industry. Do as much as you can. After the first year, then you start like focusing on what are the right events to be at and focusing maybe more on the idea you want to do. I wouldn't start a startup like as soon as I moved here, you know,
right.
Unless you've already started a startup for a couple of years and you move over here because like Wacomin or something invests in you. But if you're just like moving out here, first thing you should do is just take a year, meet as many people as possible, get to know as many people as possible, take some risks, just be like, this is the thing I'm thinking about. I'd love to do coffee and just, get your opinion on this, whatever. That's the thing to do. And the more people you meet, the more people you talk to, the better your ideas become, the easier it all becomes. Great jobs, startups, co-founders, it all happens because people meet people.
Yeah. There's so much serendipity here. Like, actually, so you've lived here now, Eric, for how long has it been?
A bit over a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the biggest difference, would you say, from, like, Detroit?
Well, I was snapping when Ben was saying move, because I was in Detroit for a couple of years. Yeah. And it's very... I mean, I love
my sister lives in Detroit.
Really?
Yeah.
Detroit?
Well, right outside of Detroit, Plymouth.
Okay, sweet.
I go to Detroit like several times a year.
That's awesome. Yeah, I went to University of Michigan 4 years and then Detroit for a couple of years. And I love Detroit, so I'm not going to speak badly about it. But the density of super intelligent, just the density of where it's all happening is here. And so I didn't realize how much I was missing. Just in terms of all the things that are happening and just the random serendipity you mentioned. If I didn't move to San Francisco, I wouldn't, and at the time I was with my other startup, I wouldn't have joined Product Hunt. It wouldn't have happened for me.
Yeah.
So.
There's kind of an interesting, to counter that a little bit, I completely agree actually. Like, the reason why Product Hunt is even a thing is because I moved here like over 4 years ago and built a lot of really good relationships, a lot of really good people that helped me. And so that I can definitely dedicate this area and this move to that. But there's also this movement towards remote working and nomad lifestyle that's really interesting. And we see so many different products emerging on Product Hunt dedicated for that, either finding nomad jobs, remote jobs, or for helping people in that kind of lifestyle. And I think it's this interesting movement that's largely being influenced by, I think, more and more companies are open to remote workers, remote hires, but also it's just easier to communicate with things like Slack and GitHub and all these digital ways of communication.
WordPress and Automattic have done it for forever.
Yeah,
they've done it really well. Here's the big difference I see, though. If you want to work for a great company, you can do it remote.
Yeah.
You can make that happen. If you want to be an entrepreneur and build a company, you've got to come to one of the hubs, because that's the only way. You've got to meet the investors in person. You have to meet some of the top engineering prospects in person. You have to recruit in person. It's, you know, you need to get those influencers in person. And so it's really just kind of about what your goal is. You know, you can have a great lifestyle and have a great job and build some awesome products, and be living in a remote tropical location or in Detroit. But if you want to build a great company, it is just naturally harder in some of these other areas because it's hard. There's a smaller pool of both investors and
talent.
And it's not saying either that you can't move to a Silicon Valley or New York for a couple of years and then move back to where. And I know people have done it and done it successfully. That's not a bad idea either. You just have to dedicate some time to networking in the hubs. Mm-hmm.
To what do you credit kind of the rise of Mashable or the rise of your personal career, your professional career?
I'll start with Mashable first.
Sure.
So Mashable did a couple things. We did a couple things that really worked for the long term. The first one was, obviously we picked a topic that really became very important, which was social media. That was the very first topic that Mashable really focused on. And that worked out extraordinarily well. And the rise of that and making until, now it's a mainstream thing. But it was also that we taught our audience how to use social media. And so in the early days, this may seem silly, but we literally wrote articles on like how to retweet a tweet. And I wrote an article like 20 ways to share a blog post. I am sure it's still up somewhere. And but you write these articles.
Right now.
Yeah, go Google. It's somewhere. You literally write these articles. Like I wrote the article on how to use Google Wave. That got like 3 million hits. But you write these articles and guess what? The first thing they're going to use their new knowledge on is Mashable. They're going to use their knowledge of how to retweet and how to share. Is it still up?
Yeah. March 29th, 2009.
2009.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
See, look, we're looking at icons right now.
This is great.
We see Y Combinator and we see Google Reader and a bunch of others that are not alive anymore.
So we have Twitter, Facebook, Dig, MySpace profile.
MySpace.
Posting on LinkedIn.
StumbleUpon.
Delicious, good. Some of these are still relevant. Reddit's still relevant.
Friend feed still exists, by the way. I look every couple... No, seriously, you pull it up. I still have my friend feed account, so it gets comments. There's still people, I was looking at the stats. There's a bunch of people in India who still use it.
Huh.
And, Facebook hasn't updated it once in the last, 5 years. But it's still getting used.
Right.
It's all about the community.
Yeah, ping.fm. I remember that vaguely.
That was years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, FanFeed still exists.
Interesting.
So you chose something that was just burgeoning, that was about to get huge. You kind of pegged your wagon to that.
And then we had a combination of, news content and evergreen content. So that sharing content, but also advice, how to use social media to plan a vacation. I think I wrote something like that too. And a bunch of those. And it really just grew. And, Mashable ever since has really kind of evolved. Now it's more of a true news organization with obviously the BuzzFeed lists, but also people at the Oscars, people in war zones, they have all of that. And so it's that also that expansion, because Mashable's never been afraid to expand beyond what it originally is, which was tech and social media, and people criticized it, but the result is that Mashable's a very, very big publication, much bigger than any tech site now.
Was that the initial plan in the beginning to expand, or was it more let's just focus forever at social media? What was the idea?
I think Pete always had the idea and the desire to expand, but I think he also had the right plan of you dominate one vertical and then you expand out. Yeah. One of the things that kills lots of companies is trying to focus on too much. Mm-hmm. It's just fine. Focus on one vertical or one sector or one audience, dominate it, and then move on and expand as you expand your resources. Prove the model works, perfect it, and then take it to other areas. Mashable did, and it's worked out really well for Mashable.
Mm-hmm. And were you friends with Pete, or did you just see this growing and how did...
So actually what originally happened was, 2008, after I graduated from college, I was just I was a product manager actually and a first Facebook app company. I helped build Facebook apps in the early days. And then after that, I joined one of my mentors, Mark Ackler, at a web health company. And I was doing all the design work and SEO work and the back end content stuff, and I was editing and coding in Drupal, all of Drupal's PHP stuff.
Oh Drupal.
I haven't touched on years. But I can tell Drupal site as soon as it pops up.
Yeah.
Oh. But what happened was that, I just applied randomly to just write for part time for Mashable. They were paying, I read Mashable a whole bunch. And then two of my friends recommended me to Adam Ostro, the editor-in-chief at the time. And it just, I got the gig, which was just write an article once, 2 weeks or something. But my articles went viral and I got a lot of traffic for mine. And eventually it just came to a point where I'm like, I really want to move from, I was in Chicago at the time, it was just too cold. And Mashable was just like, want to move and become an editor here? And I'm like, all right. Especially about the moving part, moved to Silicon Valley, and it's worked out. I'm still like pinch myself over how well it's worked out.
Yeah. Interesting. And then, but how did you decide to go into VC then after that? Like, that's a very different career from writing.
Well,
editor to VC.
Not as much as you would think.
Really?
Writers, especially tech writers, what you got to do is evaluate tons of different ideas, tons of companies,
mm-hmm.
analyze them, analyze industries, analyze markets, meet lots of people. Leverage that. All those kind of skill sets apply to VC. It works very well back and forth. I mean, you think like, you know, more like Mike Morowitz and a bunch of other like Alsop, who've done a great job as journalists turned VCs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's this generation of, you know, me and MG and Arrington and others coming in that it's just a skill set that really does apply. But for me, it was just a matter of I wanted to be more hands-on working with companies, and rather than just writing the stories, I wanted to be part of the story or
mm-hmm.
help that story get crafted. You also get burned out writing articles all the time, every day.
Yeah, I can imagine. My favorite time to write is on the weekends in the morning when it's quiet and I'm not pressured in any way.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's hard for me to write.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually write best usually in the middle of the night when I don't have emails coming in.
Yeah.
I had to shut everything off, you know, really do it. When I wrote the book, I actually went off to, I have a place in Thailand, so I wrote in my place in Thailand for like a month and a half. That was where I finished most of it.
Really?
You need to get away. And the nice thing about being in Thailand was I could not take any meetings and I was in a different time zone. So I got a lot done there.
Hmm.
So the book's about to come out next week.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, after, of course, it's a big hit, you know, big success, everything you want it to be.
And you see the cats invade San Francisco because that's part of the plan, I think, right?
See all the cats.
Yeah.
Army of cats is part of the plan.
Big collaborative event between Product Hunt and Captivology where a ton of cats come out.
Yeah.
What do you think is next for you? What do you want to focus on?
I mean, I want to continue to work with great startups and building out the fund and perfecting all that stuff. I've learned a lot over the last few years with the book and the investing in the fund, and I made a lot of mistakes as well. But I've been, you know, I can leverage that to do something even better. To say exactly the direction we'll take, you know, the fund or my investing or, you know, the others, anything else, right? Because you get lots of interesting and random offers with books.
Right.
Like, I have really random stuff in my inbox.
Reality TV show? You got those yet?
I've been offered a couple TV shows. I was actually offered Utopia on Fox once.
What is that?
It was a reality show that... where they took 15 people and they were going to, like, build a perfect society.
What a weird concept.
Yeah. They like, took them in a remote location and they were going to build a perfect society, you know, and you'd have, like, these people, like, trying to build a perfect world, and they were just cut off contact from the world for a year. But the show...
For a year.
Wow. But the show flopped, and after 3 months, they sent everyone back home. So I'm just like, well, I was never going to do that. But it's still just like, well, that was expected.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, you have to do a lot of TV for a book, but I'm mostly just focused on what can I do to help entrepreneurs and help especially bring us to a next level in the future. I will tell you what the last thing I want to do with my life, though, is it is to build a commercial space station. It's my final goal in life. And
really?
So I'm nowhere near here yet, but I hope I can beat Elon Musk. Or work with Elon Musk to do that one. But I think I have a couple check boxes to check before I can do that one.
Elon, if you're listening.
Yeah, yeah. And you know where to launch it once it's out there. For our product on, hopefully we'll have some sort of like space vertical by then.
Yeah.
All the cool space stations and space rockets.
You guys could be up on the space station in space launching it.
Exactly, yeah.
But I want to be commercial. I want people to be able to live on it.
Wow, okay. How far away do you think we are from something like that happen, like for regular people to be living in space?
Our lifetimes.
Yeah.
For sure. Absolutely. Stuff is, all this kind of work is accelerating things to people like Musk. And it's just accelerating faster and faster. And, you know, in a few years we'll have commercial space travel, just like, you know, just touching the stars, and then it'll get better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's reasonable to think in 50 years, maybe, we could have things like commercial space stations and people living in space and for sure people on Mars. I don't think it'll be Mars 1, but it'll be something.
Yeah.
So I absolutely, like, it's so hard to imagine what the world was just like 10, 15 years ago. You know, I think about that picture of the Pope, of the, when they had Pope Benedict, like, you know, the swearing in, and it was just everyone looking up. And then they had, you know, yeah, you're talking about, they had the new Pope, you know, and they had, everyone had their phones in the air, like, taking photos and videos. Yeah. The world changes so fast.
Yeah. Well, I was, the other day I was thinking, what would life be like without Twitter? And that's just one product of my life, but, like, I don't know. It'd be so different. Because
In 10 years, 15 years, we're going to be asking, what was life like without automated cars?
Mm-hmm.
People are going to be like, people actually drove these things?
Yeah.
That's going to be a real question for our future kids. They're not going to understand.
Do you ask yourself that question when you're evaluating companies to invest in? Do you kind of go through that exercise and thinking, if this works, will it change life, you know, significantly to the point where you couldn't imagine life without it?
And what is your investment philosophy?
I go through a lot of those thought pieces. Yes, especially, like, we really want to be investing in the future. Like I said, like, one of our companies, Ubeam, we're thinking, like, if it succeeded, not having to plug your computer or any other device in, that would change the world in a very significant way. That could open up so many possibilities that I can't even imagine.
So much less stress when you hit that 20% mark and the battery goes red. You're like, oh, shit, I got to go home now, guys. Sorry. Sorry, I'm almost off the grid.
And it's going to change. Yeah. And it's hard to predict that. I mean, our investment philosophy, like, we literally have a 13-point investment philosophy in terms of internally, like, the kind of things we choose. But really it kind of comes down to a combination of, do we think that these founders can scale with their startup, you know? A lot of times people think about, can this startup and this business scale? But we think even more about, does this founder, especially the founder CEO, will he still or she still be the founder CEO 5, 10, 15 years from now? Because you think all the great companies of the last decade, Uber, Facebook, all these others, Workday, a bunch of others, their founders are still CEO. You can only think of a few examples like Twitter that where it's not the case, but even then they're still heavily involved. And so we want to find founders that are, you know, we can project that are going to really scale with their companies.
Mm-hmm.
And then it really kind of comes down to a lot of the basics. Like, is this a company that can generate revenue? Is this a company that especially can handle a down market? Because at some point, there's going to be a down market. I don't know whether it's 3 months or 3 years from now, but at a certain point. And will they be able to generate the revenue or have the protection to be able to survive that? And then can we as a team help that company, you know? We focus on attention, the press, and the marketing and all that. Can we help that company? Can we help them on the press? Can we help them on attention?
Yeah.
And if we can't, then it doesn't make sense because we want to be able to help our companies out.
Yeah. Interesting. The scaling aspect of that is something that's been on my mind. Like, we're now, what are we at now? I guess Nihil just joined, so we're like 14, 15 people, a few more coming on board pretty soon, and then thinking also, like, all of our roles have changed slightly, and we're still so early.
I walked into the office and I saw you guys on piggyback, like, that was the only way you could fit everyone in the office.
Yeah.
That'd be great if it were true.
I know. We're not there yet, thankfully. But yeah, I've been thinking about that, and, like, you have to learn new things, and when you grow as a team, you also have to, like, everyone has to operate differently. It's probably one of the hardest challenges. It's definitely the hardest thing that we faced at Playhaven. Previous startup I was at, it was scaling from 10 to only like 100 people, but still, like, every 20 people, you have to reinvent the entire process and do new things. It's tough.
It's also, especially the culture part, right? Yeah. There's such a different culture when there's just the founders versus, you know, when you have like 3 employees, 5 people versus 20 versus 100.
Mm-hmm.
And every time you got to think, what are the things that are the same or what are the things you got to formalize, you know? It just, you have to formalize stuff as things get bigger, but you don't want to lose that that innovative essence that is the key characteristic of all great early stage companies.
Yeah. You know, I just realized we're missing an important thing. We have no Nerf guns in the office.
Yeah.
You have no Nerf guns?
No Nerf guns.
I noticed something was off.
I know.
What happened to the Nerf guns?
We just never bought them. We bought selfie sticks instead.
Yeah. We've been so...
Is this how the world has changed? Or is it just that you guys are scary? I'm obviously all about selfies because I'm an investor in shots, but still. Yeah. Actually, I'm all in favor of the selfie stick now.
Yeah, and I kind of want both. I want a selfie stick dart gun.
Yeah.
Someone. Internet, make that.
What's going to be the next like product that every startup office has? It's got to be like a cool new one. Like
drone dart, drone stuff. I don't know.
You got to have a cheaper drone to do that, though. Like a $20 drone that you just flick in the air and then it just like starts shooting darts. You could have like drone wars. Drone wars. This sounds like a TV show. Yeah. Instead of like BattleBots.
Yes,
BattleBots coming back. Yeah.
I don't know what the hell you guys talk about.
BattleBots is the most ridiculous. What was it? Comedy Central that put it on? No.
It might have been. So BattleBots was amazing. Like Grant and Mahara from MythBusters was one of the people, and Bill Nye was like the technical expert. And they just have two robots that would just like fight each other until one broke. Wow. Yeah. And like they have like giant claws and chainsaws and that. Oh God, that's right.
It's a great show. And each there are different types of styles of robots. There's like the ones that flip other robots around. There's others that shoot fire. There's this one guy that would create these artistic. It was the worst. Didn't have any, like, it had no firepower of any kind. It was just artistic and beautiful. And one of them was a snake he made. Literally, it was like a snake that moved around, like, all snake-like. Couldn't actually do anything, but it looked beautiful. And it was, like, art for him. But BattleBots is super fun.
If any producers listening to this podcast want to help us create Drone Deathmatch, the three of us are available for discussion.
Yes.
Because that would be a popular show.
Mm-hmm. I'm down. Cool. Well, thanks for coming on, Ben. Sir, other than the book, I mean, actually, when is the book coming out? Because this will probably publish either this week or next week, probably around the same time that you launch.
It comes out Tuesday, March 3rd.
All right. That's next week for us.
Yeah. So I'll be traveling. I'll be in New York, LA, Austin for South by doing a keynote there, Seattle, San Francisco, Silicon Valley, Chicago doing a talk in Northwestern. I'm going to be doing talks at all the WeWorks. So I have to publish that schedule. I'm going to be an exhausted man.
I'm exhausted listening to you. I'm not a traveler, so I'm like, all right, one city's enough for a week. Yeah.
We're going to South by 2.
Yeah, we're going to have to party up. We'll all have to have one. Oh, God. I can only imagine the lines for a part-time party at South By.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll do one. We're not prepared for a big party. We might just ad hoc throw something out.
I have people for that, you know.
Yeah?
I have people who could help you plan a party, like, immediately.
Yeah?
They're the
best. And get a venue?
Get a venue, get you sponsorship money so you don't even have to spend if you didn't want to.
Ooh, we should talk offline.
Yeah.
Sounds
good.
Anything else you want to mention?
I mean, beyond Captivology and Dominate Fund, you guys are awesome and kicking total butt. And I love, like, being able to open up products and be like, these are some weird things, but this is better than reading the news again. It's so much better than just reading the news.
We should create little quotes from every guest of what product it is. That would be a great one. Absolutely. I like that.
You just see Ben's face with it.
Yeah.
I was suggesting, you remember, last thing, they have the like Product Hunt cats in the corner. I was suggesting that they make an Instagram wall or something where people come in and they do a cat face. And they have to, that's the thing that you have to do to get access to the office.
I like it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Rap Genius used to have one where it'd be the founders with all these rappers. But for us, it should be all these people with next to a cat.
Yeah. Maybe we'll just get a real cat too and make it official.
Absolutely.
Cool. Thanks for coming on, man.